Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off by giving you my take on Odell Beckham. Then we bring in Jenny and Connor for the news. And as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome in. Week 5 is in the books. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. And I don't think there's any place we can start other than with the Odell Beckham New York Giants mess. And we're here again. And I don't know that any of us should be surprised. And really, to me, the upshot of this whole thing relates back to the one question that we came out of the summer without an answer to. And if you want to look at the totality of 2018, I think you go back to that video that surfaced in March that was taken over in France that had a powdery substance, Odell, some entertainment there. There was a lot some pizza.
Don't forget the pizza.
There was a lot going on in that picture. And that, of course, led to Odell's name kind of being floated out there in trade talks. Odell winds up, and this is a credit to Pat Shurmur. Pat Shurmur built a relationship with him. Odell winds up showing up for all of the spring workouts. When he wasn't there, he was very communicative with the team about it, and shows up to training camp, was a good soldier throughout the offseason for the most part after that incident in March. And as a result, the Giants give him a 5-year, $90 million contract. And I think the open question at that point was, is this a player on his best behavior for a few months to try and show a new general manager and a new coach that he's worth investing in long term? In essence, putting on a little bit of an act for 4 or 5 months to get the money that he wanted? Or was it B, a guy in his mid-20s actually maturing? And I think we got our answer over the weekend. I don't think he's matured. I think he's the same guy. And I think the Giants bought what they had in 2017. It doesn't mean he doesn't have it in him. And I think over the 4 or 5 months, I don't think he can totally fake it. So I don't think it's that he doesn't have it in him. But it took 1 month for this to happen. It took one freaking month for the drama to come back. And look, I understand he's competitive. I understand he's emotional. I understand all of that. And if this had happened after a bad loss, post-game in the locker room, fine. If this happened maybe when things got heated in a media scrum during the week, okay. This was a coordinated interview. He had time to think about what he was going to say. And he goes in there, brings Lil Wayne with him for some reason, and throws his quarterback under the bus, throws his coaching staff under the bus, and puts his team in a near impossible situation going into a game weekend. And so I'll bring in Connor and Jenny then. I think a big piece of the, if you're the Giants right now, I think you're worried, because your highest paid players, almost invariably across the league, your highest paid players, they are who they are. Like, they represent you. The rest of the locker room is going to watch what they do and watch how they carry themselves and watch how they act, how they work, all of that. And if you're the Giants right now, I think you look at this and you say to yourself, like, uh-oh, we thought he grew up, uh-oh. Because I talked to coaches in that building who said he was great in the spring and the summer, and he did everything right. And I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. If I'm the Giants, I'm worried. I don't think that this is a small little thing. Like, it took a month for us to get to this point.
Well, I think, you know, I have two thoughts on this. The first is that, you know, what I wrote back when he signed the deal, which is that, you know, Odell,
he wasn't going to change. I mean, you know, I spent a couple weeks, you know, working on a story where I talked to all of his friends outside of the football business, all the people that he knows away from the field. This is who he is. He's an enigmatic personality. He's, you know, he's acting out of every emotion 100% of the time, all the time. And I'm shocked that they didn't realize that this is an act. And I think that what they needed to get used to was defending him at all costs, because, you know, he's going to be the face of the franchise.
How can they defend him when he's attacking them?
How could they defend him for taking a leak on the field? How could they defend him for a lot of the other stuff that he's done before? The Giants always stand behind their own players, and by signing him to that extension, they're saying that he's our guy, and he's going to outlast Eli. There's a chance that he outlasts Saquon. Who knows? I mean, with the mileage that running backs have. So I think that they kind of walked into this.
I just don't know. Like, I can't think of an example of a winning team having something like lots of winning teams have problems. I mean, God, the Giants had Plaxico Burress on the championship team in 07, and he winds up shooting himself in the foot. You know, like, I'm not saying you can't have that on your roster, but this is a like the first sign of trouble. He's throwing everyone else under the bus, and the biggest problem with it. And Tony Dungy said this on Football Night. The biggest problem is, where was any responsibility? Like, where was he taking any responsibility for anything that happened in September?
Yeah. I agree with that. I thought that was a good point by Dungy. It's an interesting question because, okay, Coughlin, the end of his coaching career, you know, came about in part through an inability that was a perceived inability to manage Odell. McAdoo was fired in part because of inability to manage Odell. And now you have Shurmur, the third coach in 4 years that's trying to take a crack at it, and no one has really been able to come up with the right formula. I know you have some thoughts on Shurmur's reaction, Connor, so this will segue into that. It was a little all over the place. So one thing I thought that, you know, I did think was good about it was putting it back on the locker room and saying they're handling it, and that he felt like they had the locker room to handle that. So that kind of challenges the other players, you know,
who's
going to
get in Odell's face?
But that's the crux. That I was just going to say, I don't know who the person is who will get in his face. I don't know the answer to that.
I think this is partially on Shurmur. I think that the Dirty Harry Act was so transparent. And if you want to come out and act like a tough guy in front of a bunch of reporters, how about trying to do that to your own players first? Because clearly, he didn't get in Odell's face. And if he acted that tough in front of Odell, maybe he wouldn't have gone on ESPN and complained about the heart of the team beforehand.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it worth it? Is he worth this? Like he's a great player. Is it worth it?
I mean,
because I would argue that he might not be, because I don't think there are certain things that you need to have to win. Like, most really great teams are at least competent at left tackle. Like most great teams are really good at left tackle, but most good teams are at least competent there. Most good teams can get after the passer, so you have pass rushers. Most good teams can cover. Do you need a great receiver? I mean, I look at the receivers, the number one receivers on the championship teams, right? Julian Edelman. Like, last year, it was Alshon Jeffrey on a one-year deal. Before that, Demaryius Thomas when Peyton Manning couldn't throw. Golden Tate, Anquan Boldin, Victor Cruz, Greg Jennings, Marcus Colston. You don't need one. If he's going to be a party, like I'm not saying you don't want one. Don't get me wrong here, but I think part of, like, if your best player is acting this, like, there's got to be some sort of huge payoff. Like, and I don't know, like I don't think he's preventing you from being bad.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're going to go out and, you know, you're clearly not going to say it in the locker room, and instead you're going to push around a bunch of reporters who waited respectfully long enough to ask you about the elephant in the room before the game. I think it was like
Shurmur.
Yeah. I think there were 6 or 7 questions before he even got a question about Odell. And then he screamed at this guy, and, you know, then bench him. You know, I mean, be a tough guy in the locker room, too. Don't just be a tough guy to a bunch of reporters doing their jobs. Bench Odell, you know, show people that you're this guy. And yeah. I think that was just so transparent, that just an act, just blow off all your frustration on a bunch of reporters instead of going in there and fixing the team.
Well, and here's the problem, right? The problem is that now every other player sees that. And it's like, if things go wrong for me, here's my lever. Like, I can, like...
Like, just like last year, that's how McAdoo got fired.
Right, that's exactly what
people
happened.
People
started
McAdoo. Saying things,
and it wasn't necessarily that Odell was the worst person on the planet. But I said this last year, like, after the whole dog peeing thing and acting that way, and like McAdoo coming out and like basically validating the behavior, saying like it's no big deal, whatever. Right, I don't think it's any coincidence that then all of a sudden you had all the corners acting out, right? Like then all of a sudden Eli Apple's a problem and Dominique Rogers Cromartie's a problem and Janoris is a problem. Like that sort of stuff, like if you draw lines and say like, no, you don't act this way and we're gonna punish him and we're gonna take him off the field, and if anyone else does it, then it's gonna be twice as bad because you just saw him get punished for it. Instead, like he's out there the whole time. It's like if you're another player and you look at that, is there anything preventing you from doing whatever the hell you want?
Sadly, right. That's the state of play in the NFL. There's one coach that routinely punishes players for stuff like this. Seriously. I mean, and everybody else is like, well, yeah, we're very disappointed, but of course he's going to play because he's the best player on our team. And
right.
You know.
And the out is always, well, we're not going to punish the rest of the team exactly. by taking him off the field.
And then you have the quarterback facing pressure to get the ball deep to him because that's what he wants. And I have to make a confession, guys, here. I've pretended like I got the Dirty Harry reference, and I didn't. I just went with the flow of the conversation, and I have not seen that movie. So
I don't think I've seen Dirty Harry.
You know what? Honestly, if I saw it was a long time ago, and I'm just... That's my default for like a guy swaggering into some place like a badass.
Right. Okay. I'll use. So it. That's why. Now that's that I understand it, I'll
that,
use.
That's what the that's fair, right?
But what's like, the reference how you took for it? A totally transparent like fake badass? That's what we need to. That's the question. Well,
that's why you throw the word act in there.
There you go.
That's why you throw the word act in there. I don't know. I think it's hard to build around a player like this. I really do. I think it's hard to. It's. And look, like the Eagles last year had a lot of big personalities on their team, but they also had guys who, like, Jason Peters is a boss. Like Kelsey is a boss. Like, they have guys in that locker room who regulate that stuff. And if you don't have that, Malcolm Jenkins is a boss. Like, if you don't have guys like that who are able to control, like, everything that's going on in the locker room, and if your highest paid guy is acting that, like, it's just it's very, very difficult. I think in any sport it's very, very difficult to put a team together that way. All right, so we'll get to the news now. Enough Odell. Our first news item for the week, and this will be we'll have a much happier tone here as we get into the news. Saints quarterback Drew Brees broke Peyton Manning's all-time passing yardage record on Monday night, completing 26 of 29 passes for 363 yards and 3 touchdowns in a 43-19 rout of the Redskins. My leadoff thought here with Brees would be that I can't remember many quarterbacks who've gotten through so much. Like, he slipped in the draft in 2001. He got benched a bunch of times his first few years in the league. Like, they draft Phillip Rivers. He blows out his shoulder. All these things go wrong. And so I think that's what's really incredible about him getting here, because that record is it's takes excellence, but it also takes longevity and staying power. And the fact that he was able to fight through all of that and wind up in a place where he starts for 13 years in a row and becomes a championship player. And credit to Sean Payton, too, because he's, you know, he has a big hand in all of this, too. I think is fantastic. And the other thing is he's also on the front end of, like, guy like Baker Mayfield, who comes from a spread offense and throws the ball all over the yard and isn't 6'5". And so it's just as much as great as like the Manning and the Brady are, like, I almost feel like Brees is a more interesting story just because of all he went through to get here.
There are so many parts that were unlikely. I was at the game before he broke the record, and Zach Strief is one of the radio broadcasters, obviously one of his longtime blockers, and he was saying that when Brees got to New Orleans, you know, it was just a couple months from shoulder surgery, and Strief was drafted that spring and comes out to practice. Brees can't throw at 20 yards, and he remembered a throw in the preseason, the fourth preseason game, with like hung in the air for like 6 seconds, and he said, you know, even
like,
is this all he has left? And it's, you know, it's so interesting too. It's like I always just think about that fork in the road in NFL history when if Saban, you know, Saban's version of the story is that they'd offered him a deal and the medical staff vetoed it. And if Brees had gone there, were Belichick and Saban in the same division for a decade? And I mean, I know that's been belabored, but it's still, you know.
How does that affect college football?
Yeah, there's so many ripple effects.
Yeah, I mean, Saban's not at Alabama. Maybe Urban never leaves Florida. Like, it's just there's so many different things. Like, there's so many levels of, like, how that could have affected everything. I thought the Saints looked great, too. Like, I think the Saints, you know, everything last night was going to be overshadowed. Everything Monday night was going to be overshadowed by Brees breaking the record, and rightfully so. That's a monumental achievement. But God, that offense looked good. And with Mark Ingram back in there, like, it looks like they're going to be able to use Kamara in a variety of different ways now, more judiciously. They're not going to wear him out. And the defense starting to, like, show some signs of maybe what we thought it could be, even without even Lattimore gets hurt. But I thought the defensive front, like, Davenport looks like he's, like, still sort of a project, but he looks like he can make an impact. And Rankins look good, and Jordan look good. And it's just, I think it was the first time we actually saw the Saints team that maybe all of us thought was possible a couple months ago.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Sheldon Rankins. I mean, I thought that was the missing piece there. That was someone who could disrupt and create pressure from the interior when they had guys like Davenport and Cam Jordan on the outside. And I thought that once they got rolling there, there was nothing that Washington could have done to stop them. And so I think, I mean, finally, a team that Drew Brees has with a legit complementary defense. And we saw hints of that last year, but this is something else. This is definitely another step above.
And I think we all, like, it's funny because when I was there in camp, I like one of the things that more than one person there brought up to me privately was, like, this is the first time. Like, normally when they're in training camp, the offense has kicked the defense's ass. Like, it's a bloodbath every year because they're so advanced offensively, and everything that Drew can do, just because he's been in the league for so long and they've developed it over such a long period of time, the defense has just taken a beating each and every summer. And a number of people said to me, like, this is the first time that the defense has actually been competitive. Like, it's been pretty even, like, back and forth. And that told you something. And that's why over the first few weeks of the season, I was like, God, where is that? Like, you know, like it didn't look like it's back to old Saints defense. Like, this doesn't look like it should look. And last night I thought it started to look like it should look. Like, it's not there yet, but there are a ton of, like, little signs in that game that it was coming. So, all right. I'm being clumsy now, huh? All right, Connor. News item.
Phones in the meeting.
Phones in the meeting. Well, you're looking
10,000 in the fine jar. Yeah. That's rough. Behind an overtime drive led by Baker Mayfield and a knuckleball winner of a kick from Greg Joseph, the Browns knocked off the Ravens 12-9. Cleveland is now 2-2-1. Finally, professional football in Cleveland. Yep. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, this was obviously the biggest challenge that Baker Mayfield faced so far, and I think that he responded fairly well. I think that the lingering question to me that I was left with after that game is, you know, if this team is middling or, you know, maybe even finishes with 6 or 7 wins, does Hugh Jackson stay? Is he good? Because I feel like now that we're seeing all these good things coming up for Cleveland, the defense, I think, leads the league in takeaways, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good things happening. A lot of it comes back to, like, his game management that's costing teams, some of the play calling that he's making. And I'm wondering if, like, all these good vibes could potentially be derailed by the fact that Dorsey's going to want
a
better head coach.
Well, I mean, like, look at what John Robinson did in Nashville. Like last year, the Titans didn't just make the playoffs, they advanced. They got to the divisional round, and Mike Mularkey still got fired. And part of that was, and I think for Bob Quinn in Detroit too, Jim Caldwell didn't do a bad job in 16 and 17. It was just, I think in both those cases, it was, I've been here for 2 years, and if I go into year three, now all of a sudden, like, if the bottom falls out, like, it might not just be the coach, it might be me. So, like, this might be my last, like, I might have to hire a head coach now. And, like, with Dorsey, like, he's the only one who knows. He's the only one who knows whether or not, like, what the bar is, how far Hugh has to go to get where his job is safe. I'd say this. I think a lot of it's going to depend on how they look in December and whether or not the arrow is still pointing up. And if we're all looking at them in December and saying, God, like, not only are they pretty good, but they've ascended over the course of the year, and the young talent's getting developed. And I think Hugh's got a good staff. I'll say that for him. Like, Haley's clearly a very good offensive coordinator. I think we've seen how they miss him in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Not so much last week, but over time. Greg Williams, I think, has done a good job with a lot of the young defensive talent there. I didn't think he was very good in 17. I think he's been a lot better in 18. And so there's reason to keep him. And I think Hugh, to his credit, has done a good job of keeping everybody on board when, I mean, going through 1-31, that's not easy either.
Yeah, keeping the energy, you know, keeping the young players and getting, you know, people, free agents obviously are getting money to come there, but you know, getting big contracts or whatever. But I mean, I don't know, you know, despite the record, your career had a team that had excitement about it going into this year. So that is something. Speaking of excitement, this is a remarkable story. I was taking the SEPTA train from the Eagles game to 30th Street Station, surrounded by Eagles fans, and a Baker chant broke out on the SEPTA. And I was like, the Eagles fans were a little like, you know, deflated, defeated. And all of a sudden, someone started chanting Baker. And then the guys explains why he said they should be 5-0. What a world! In the Super Bowl city of the Super Bowl champion Eagles, they are chanting Baker Mayfield's name.
They're borderline like must see though every week now.
Yeah.
You go from them being like maybe the fifth or sixth game you're paying attention to, like in that early window. I mean, it's got to be Jacksonville, Kansas City because of the implications and all the rest of it, but. Like the Browns Ravens game was up there as one of the ones you wanted to watch, and so much of it's because of Baker. And you know what people there have told me is that there's an energy and a hope that he brings. Like, and it's just, you know, one of their coaches said to me, the biggest thing is like, you know, now people don't feel like they have to be perfect. Like they can just go out and focus on whatever they're doing, and we don't have to be perfect because Baker can make up for. This guy, like this block being missed or this route being run wrong, like Baker can make up for those things because he's a playmaker out there. I think the best example of it came at the end of the game when, you know, the end around doesn't work. They get dropped for an 11-yard loss. They're in 2nd and 21, and Baker scrambles for 13 on second down and then picks up the 8 they needed and then some on the crossing route where he had to make that happen. Like the pocket collapsed around him and he sort of threw it off his back foot there to Willie's. It's just. There's so many good signs. Like, you don't want to get overly excited because you know there's going to be adjustment from the defense and everything else, but there are just so many good signs there on where he's going.
You would have loved to have given some of the scouting staff there some truth serum and, you know, seen what would have been the decision had Sashi Brown remained and had the old regime changed because, you know, if they had the first and the fourth pick, I mean, these are franchise-changing picks, potentially Ward and Baker Mayfield. And for the first time, the franchise is on an upward trajectory for the first time maybe since the franchise
We should note, too, and this is a credit to Dorsey, those weren't, like, easy picks.
Exactly. That was what I was getting at. Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, Baker was viewed by some people as the fourth best quarterback in that class.
Right.
You know, Bradley Chubb was the slam dunk at number four, you know, and to pair
and
with
Ward's
Miles Garrett.
And Ward's a smallish corner.
Exactly.
And,
yeah. And, I mean, man, would that have happened if the old regime was there? You'll never know, but talk about just a rabbit hole scenario there for the Browns.
Yeah. All right. Jenny, news item number three.
James Conner rushed for 110 yards and caught four passes for another 75 as the Steelers blew the Falcons out 41-17 at Heinz Field on Sunday. So I didn't realize it sounds like Conner's fantasy football segment here, speaking about James Conner's day, but
we will get there later,
I guess.
Yeah, I think the Steelers, look, like, through all of the mess with Le'Veon, I think the offense is going to be fine. Like they've got too many players on that side of the ball. The offensive line's pretty good. Conner can play. He's not Le'Veon, but he can play. They've got the best receiver in the league in Antonio Brown. Smith-Schuster's a promising young player. James Washington from Oklahoma State, their rookie, he looks like he can play a little bit. For as much as we're making the bell thing, it's the defense. It's the problem. Like it's the defense that if this all doesn't work out. Like if we're in December and they're fighting for their playoff life and they're looking up at Cleveland or Cincinnati, like I don't think it's going to be because of the offense. I think it's going to be because of the defense.
I think the weird thing for me though about Pittsburgh, and especially this year I've noticed, and why I'm not going to fully buy into them anymore, is it seems like, you know, we only say, oh, well, everything's okay now when people are getting what they want. You know what I mean? Antonio Brown's fine now because he's getting what he wants. Ben Roethlisberger is fine because he's getting what he wants. But the team has always taken a big hit when people aren't getting what they want. When Antonio Brown isn't getting 11 targets and 100 100 yards a game when Ben Roethlisberger isn't getting protection up front or the running game's not working. And this team is still in line to face a ton of adversity. Their schedule is not easy from here on out. The division's as hard as it's been probably in a decade to win a game there. And so, you know, while it was a win against a broken Falcons team, I don't think this is any sort of, tentpole signal that everything is completely fine for the Steelers.
The Falcons are just ravaged on defense.
Yeah.
But, you know, you referenced earlier, Albert, that, you know, they miss Haley, and I really think they do. You know, I
think that's where that playground comment came from. I think it was Aditi that had it. Like, that said that a player told him we're playing way too much playground football. Like, to me, that was a way of saying we miss Todd Haley without saying we miss Todd Haley.
Because I didn't think he got – I think everyone looked at Pittsburgh, you know, when he was there and said they have so much talent. Like, of course, the offense is scoring points. But I don't know. Like, other people around the league have said to me that they thought, you know, without Haley there, that Le'Veon's numbers would drop and, you know, the offense just wouldn't quite be as good. And, you know, I think we're seeing what he's doing in Cleveland. I think he's doing a very good job there. And I do think that offense misses him.
Well, what he did – and this is – I mean, he deserves credit for this. He eventually, it took him a while, but he eventually convinced Ben, like, I'm going to extend your career if you can go out there and play point guard a little bit. Like, if we can convince you to go out there and just get rid of the ball and do things on time and play within the offense, you're going to be okay. And I think it's sort of become a model for what, like, Norv is trying to do with Cam in Carolina, where it's, you can do the playground stuff sometimes. And you can and there are going to be situations where I want you to scramble and go out and make a play, but there are going to be plays where we just want you to get the ball out of your hands and get it to Antonio Brown and get it to Smith-Schuster. And so that's why I think the playground comment, that's where I think the playground comment came in, is like, and that's where they missed Todd, is that Todd wasn't afraid to get in Ben's face, to get in AB's face, to get in Bell's face and say, no, this is the way we're doing it. That's sort of the danger in hiring Ben's buddy to be the OC, you know, and promoting Randy Fichtner. Ben got what he wanted, and great, you got a happy player, but maybe you really needed somebody who was willing to challenge him, willing to challenge him and willing to kind of make it a little harder on him than it had been. All right, news item number four. Fourth down calls came into play again in week five. In Seattle, Sean McVay's decision to go for it on fourth and one clinched a Rams win. In Houston, Jason Garrett's decision to punt on a fourth and one in overtime was the precursor to the Texans' game-winning drive. And there was another one of these types of calls within the Philly game where Doug Peterson went for two and cut a 8-point deficit to 6 points. And you know, all of this, I think, plays into coaches starting to think outside the box more on fourth down, think outside the box more on whether or not to go for two. And I'll tell you what, like, I like the decision by McVay because it fits in, and I talked to a couple of their players after the game. It fits into, like, everything that he's told them about the way they're going to be and how they're going to be aggressive and they're going to attack and all of that. God, the decision by Garrett not to go for it.
It's just ridiculous.
I just don't – I mean – and Jerry came out and said something, and now I felt forever that it was going to be really hard for Jerry to fire Garrett because Jason's almost a creation of Jerry. It's different than other coaches there. Jason is the guy who Jerry invited into the coaches' meetings when he was still a player because he wanted to coach. Jerry is the guy who hired Jason in 2007 without a title before he hired a head coach. That was before he hired Wade Phillips. He brought in Jason Garrett and said, he's either going to be the quarterback's coach, the OC, or the head coach. We're not sure yet, but we just want to have him in the building. So Jerry, I think in a certain way, views Jason as his creation. Like, I'm the one who's... So in a way, like, Jason's failure would be Jerry's failure. And I think that's why this is a different situation than we've seen before in Dallas. The fact that Jerry came out and criticized one of his decisions like that so openly. And then you look at the investment. Where's the money going? Well, the money's going on the offensive line. Now, they don't have Travis Frederick, but they've paid Lyle Collins. They paid Tyron Smith. They paid Zach Martin. They have a 225-pound quarterback who can move in Dak Prescott. And then they have a fourth overall pick at tailback. It's fourth and one. Your back's against the wall. to some degree, you know, this is one of those moments where your season might be on the line, because there are going to be a handful of these games that are going to decide which way your season is going to go, and they punted away. And I wonder if this is something we're going to remember in 2 or 3 months.
And I mean, of course, you know, the first thing that came to mind was Frank Reich, you know, went for it and gets criticized. But, you know, the numbers show that you really significantly reduce your chances of winning at that point. So I don't know.
I think all these things are circumstantial, though. Like, I think with Reich and Vrabel, we talked about this last week. I think with Reich and Vrabel, like, when you're in your first year as a head coach, I think you almost have to do things like that. Like, you almost have to, like, hey, I believe in you guys, and we're going to – now, you don't get ridiculous with it, but if it's a reasonable decision to make, like we're not playing for the tie. So in those situations, I think it totally makes sense for guys like Reich and Vrabel to go for it. Yeah, this is more of – to me, like, this, the circumstance I look at here is how that team's built and, you know, what they're – like the spot that they were in at 2-2, and it's kind of like it felt like a swing moment for their season. And to punt the ball away and then – watch the Texans go down the field and score the game-winning points. It feels like one of those things we're going to remember later on.
I think this is, you know, and we talked about this a little bit before the season, but this is all was always going to be the year, I think, where offensive coaches were either going to get found out or they were going to get, you know, promoted and, you know, and whatever you want to call it. But owners want things that are popular in the NFL. And if you need a new head coach, what do you want? You want Sean McVay. You know, you want Kyle Shanahan. And after this season, there's going to be a lot of guys that are sitting around that aren't going for it on fourth down, that aren't putting up, you know, 300 or 400 passing yards a game, that aren't doing a lot of this stuff and never have done this stuff, that haven't adjusted with the times. And I think they're going to get found out. And I think that this is one of those examples of, you know, the younger coaches, and I hate to say this phrase, but, you know, embracing analytics to some degree. You know, a lot of the stats always point to when you should go for it on fourth down or that it's more beneficial for your team. But, you know, I think that's just a small percentage of a larger thing that's happening here, you know, that some coaches just, whether it's refused to embrace, they believe in what they've done for a long time, whatever it is, and I think that they're going to get found out.
I mean, the NFL always seems to, like, lag behind on some of these things, right? Like, you know, it's so rooted in the old school that, like, when Doug Peterson goes for two there, even on the broadcast, they're like, what is he doing? But it makes sense, right? Because you figure if you think you can get either one of the 2-point conversions on two touchdowns, you know, either time you try, it's going to be worth it. So you should go for the two there.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really smart decision.
I think I'm going to give you guys a name to watch there. Lincoln Riley. Like, I don't think Lincoln Riley's looking to leave Oklahoma. I also think it'd be very hard for Lincoln Riley to turn down the Cowboys, because he's from Dallas, or he's from Texas. He's from West Texas, but he's from Texas. That job doesn't come open very often. And there is at least a, let's just call it a preliminary relationship there. And so I would not be, it wouldn't stun me if they do make a move, if that was the guy that they were targeting in 2019. And if they have that idea in their heads now, like, say they have that, say Jerry and Stephen Jones even have, like, they have that idea in their heads. That's sort of what Jason's up against the rest of the year then, right? Like, he's sort of up against that idea. And a moment like this, if that's what you're up against, like, a moment like this is going to be seen as an indictment, not just of how you handle the situation. It can be seen as an indictment of who you are.
Yeah. I mean, look at, you know, if you're sitting there and, you know, you're Jerry and you're watching the Rams and you're saying, I need it to look like this, who is the number one person right now that could make it look like that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, you know, you could say maybe LaFleur has that background, has that, and the Titans are playing well. But, I mean, you know, Jerry's not a let me hire a coordinator and, you know, he's a splashy guy. And
sure,
Lincoln Riley would be the... Well, that would be the sexy hire.
And they'll have competition, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be... Yeah. He's going to get some calls from some teams. All right, Connor, news item number 5.
Chiefs and Patriots won their Week 5 games convincingly, setting up a Week 6 Sunday night showdown in Foxborough. Definitely, at least on paper, the best regular season game of the year so far. And I totally wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots won by 3 touchdowns.
I have, like, this... So, I think the easy thing to do is to look at, like, the opener last year and how the Chiefs tore the Patriots apart. I think it was 40-21. Chiefs looked unstoppable in that game. Big play to Tyreek Hill. Big play to Kareem Hunt. I think what's so interesting about this game is that it's is the juncture of the year that it's happening at, because this is right around when the Chiefs leveled off last year. This is right around
and when the Patriots turn on,
right? Hot, yeah. This is right around when like the Chiefs offense kind of like, I don't want to say the league figured it out, but it did seem like defenses started to catch up to what they were doing. And granted, Alex Smith was the quarterback now, different circumstance, or was the quarterback then, different circumstance, but they really leveled off and they had like a 6 or 7 week slump there. And so we're right there where there's probably an amount of tape out there where, you know, like that could happen. Bills had 10 days to prepare. He's coming off of a short week. That they, you know, they played against the Colts last Thursday, so he's got 10 days to get ready for this. And I'm going to be really interested, like the cat and mouse game here. Like what is Bill going to take away? And I think what you're probably going to see is Pat Mahomes pinned in the pocket, and it's going to be, we're not worried about hitting you. We're going to pin you there, and we're going to throw a million different coverages at you, and we're going to see if you can figure it out.
Yeah, it's interesting the timing, right? Because the Patriots have the long week and they're at home, so you would say that they get an advantage in that sense as well. I remember that the Chiefs' offense leveled off and the players felt like they were playing simple coverages and you know, teams had kind of figured out that, you know, if they just kind of kept their eyes on what were they playing? I think a lot of cover two, and they were just kind of keeping their eyes on where the ball was, and it sort of negated a lot of the Chiefs' motions and things like that. I remember that was the issue last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it feels like the Patriots' offense has started to pick up. Like I think we see how important Edelman is, and I this is an amazing stat. I looked this up the other day. So if you look at the guys who are so like they're slot capable players, right? Like, so it's like Deion Branch, Troy Brown, Wes Welker, Danny Amendola, and Julian Edelman, right? So coming into the year, and I'm going to screw this stat up. Coming into the year, Tom Brady had started 261 games, I believe the number is. And there had only been 6 games where he didn't have any of those guys.
Wow.
And for the first 4 weeks of the season, so you could argue they were in a worse spot at slot receiver than they've been over the first 4 weeks of the season than they've been in the Brady era. And that, I think, is a big part. I think we got like a window into how important that position is for them. And now they got Edelman back. And so I think that changes everything. And now we're going to go to what everyone's waiting for. Everyone out there has been waiting for this, Connor. And I think we made him wait a good half hour, 40 minutes for it. It's time. It's time for Connor Orr's fantasy update.
So we lost to the worst team in the league, dropping a record to 1-4. So I guess that makes us the worst team. I am now,
you're the worst.
I am now in last
football.
Place. I'm the worst team in football. I am the lowest in scoring. And while a lot of that is on me, you know, I think that there's certainly effort questions, in the locker room. I'm going to reverse Pat Shurmur this, and I'm just going to start punishing guys. Guys are getting cut.
Or you could get Lil Wayne in here.
Yeah, I could get Lil Wayne in here. But here's one thing that I want to bring up, that really kind of rubs me the wrong way. And because when you're in last place, you know, there's a lot of haughtiness at the top of the leaderboard, especially at this point in the season. And so people will try to make trades for your best players because they think you're out of it. And, you know, if you're in first place in your fantasy league, you probably stumbled into Patrick Mahomes in the 11th or 12th round of the draft. Don't pretend you're Nick Caserio. You know, you didn't take him in the first round. This was lucky as shit. You know, you stumbled into the best player in fantasy football, maybe in fantasy football history, depending on how his year goes, in the 11th round. You know, that does not make you a smart player.
This sounds like it's like specific.
Very targeted rant.
I have a feeling this has been going on a lot of people's leagues, and, you know, people at the top of the leaderboard saying, well, I watched Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech. No, you didn't. You drafted another quarterback first. This was your backup. You didn't play him for the first 2 weeks of the season, and now all of a sudden you're at the top of the leaderboard. You're acting like John Dorsey, and I don't think that that's correct. And I think that you should admit it. And I'm not talking to anyone in
particular. Not naming names, you know. Now this will be a true test if this person listens to our podcast.
That's true. Yeah.
So is there any internal strife that you're working through?
Well,
the coach and GM are at odds.
Yeah. The GM, she's not happy. She's let me know that. She asks quite often why everybody else has receivers that can score touchdowns, and we don't. Still do not have a receiver touchdown this year, so it's, you know, we're gonna have to figure this out.
Well, I told you guys my roster is kind of colorful. We took some character risks in the draft, right? Well, guess who carried us out of our slump? Robbie Anderson carried us out of our slump.
Wow.
Robbie Anderson.
He was elated after receiving the news that he would not be suspended. Yep. And just took
just
the
fantastic.
Got the W for yep. you.
No, he has Isaiah Crowell to thank for that, keeping the other team in single high coverage for the whole game.
But you know, Robbie in that locker room this week, you know, his attitude was whatever it takes.
Well, and listen, so Crowell was on my bench. I learned my lesson, but I was trying to send a message about the wipes and you know, I took the wrong tack.
All right. He's going to get another endorsement deal. Good for him.
Well, if you want more on Connor's fantasy team, then you'll have to listen for at least, half an hour, 40 minutes next week in the podcast. Appreciate you guys coming out. All right, we're going to jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Every week on Tuesday, I put the call out for questions on Twitter. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like. That means I hit the little heart there on Twitter, and I give you an answer. And we're going to start with question number one. This is from Travis Dietrich. Should the Packers try and trade for Le'Veon Bell to give Aaron some help offensively? I don't think this happens. I've heard the Packers mentioned. Brian Gutekunst is handling things a little differently there. He's been more aggressive than his predecessor, Ted Thompson. I don't think that they're going to move draft capital to bring in a player who would force some restructures. They've got under $7 million in cap space, and a player who they by rule, and this is part of the problem with trading for Bell, by rule they can't extend. By definition, he'd be a 10, 11, 12-game rental. And so, look, I think Aaron Jones has played pretty well, should be getting the ball a little bit more. They've got Jamal Williams, another young back there. They've been middle of the pack running the ball. I think once they get a little healthier, they're going to be okay offensively. Could I see them adding a piece? Sure. Le'Veon isn't it. I'd be surprised if Le'Veon Bell landed there. All right, question number two, and full disclosure here, you can probably hear the difference in the audio. We're coming to you live from the Acela train going back to Boston. This one I had to re-record because I gave the wrong answer when we recorded it this morning. I'm coming back to it now because things have changed here. This question is from Miran. That's at Mir565. What's the buzz around the Eagles opening up cap space? Are they trying to trade for someone? I said earlier this morning that the Bills had not gotten a call from the Eagles yet on Shady McCoy. Well, that phone call has now happened. I don't know if the Eagles are going to be willing to go where the Bills would need them to go to acquire Shady McCoy, so I wouldn't hold your breath on that. I don't think there's a lot happening there right now, but certainly the talks have happened, and so I wanted to update you guys there. Here's the other thing. I don't think running back is necessarily at the top of the Eagles' list as far as things they're going to have to fix. Corner, offensive tackle, there are some bigger problems right now that they're working through. They don't have a lot of cap space, but I obviously restructuring Fletcher Cox's deal got everybody's attention, and so it's at least worth noting that they did make that phone call, and they check on everyone. They did make that phone call to inquire about bringing Shady McCoy back to Philadelphia. All right, back to the six-pack. Question number three is from Ben Waldraff. That's at BD Waldraff. Is Bill O'Brien still the right coach for the Texans? I'm going to tell you yes, and the reason why, he's helped fix that offensive line problem. Now, it's still not perfect, and they can't have Deshaun Watson getting hit the way he's gotten hit over the first month of the season. But they look better on Sunday, and Deshaun Watson looked better. And to me, I think that they were always going to have a couple of issues coming into this year, okay? One, there was going to be the corner issue. They were hurt by the fact that they had to let A.J. Boye go after the 2016 season because they were already paying Jonathan Joseph, Kareem Jackson, who's now playing some safety, because they spent a first-round pick on Kevin Johnson. They made the decision to let A.J. Boye walk. That was a mistake. And the offensive line issue was, you know, in large part because they traded Dwayne Brown in the aftermath of the Anthem controversy and Bob McNair's involvement of it last year. And so I think coming into the year, they knew they were going to have to manage their offensive line problem. They knew they were going to have to manage their corner problem. They are not as close as I thought they were, but I think they've found an effective way to manage those issues. Defensively, they looked better on Sunday night. That defensive line played really well against a good Cowboys offensive line. And the coverage problems, you know, they're still there, but they aren't what they were 3 or 4 weeks ago. And the offensive line is improving. And so, look, this is year one for Brian Gain in the revamp program around Bill O'Brien. I think you got to give it time. And I think we have seen some development and some management of problems that should at least give you some hope if you're in Houston that this thing might look pretty good when we get to December. Question number four, this is from Chis Wessel. That's at CH Wessel. How serious will John Gruden be scrutinized if they finish 2-14 publicly? He'll be scrutinized. There's no question about it. There'll be lots of questions asked about whether or not the game's passed him by, blah, 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 blah. Is his job on the line? No. They gave him a 10-year contract. That is not the most cash-rich operation. And beyond just that, Gruden's made very clear what he thinks about the roster. He's made very clear that he thinks this is going to be a process that's going to take more than a few months to figure out. And so I think coming out of this year, you'll see the continued turning over of the roster to bring in Gruden-type players. Now, will that work? There's definitely reason to have some skepticism based on how the roster eroded in his years in Tampa. But you got to give this thing a chance. You got to give this thing a chance to breathe. This is, I know we want to, you know, write referendums on everyone right away, and I don't think he can do it yet. Give him a chance to modernize his offense. Give him a chance to get some of his own guys in there. It hasn't looked great, but I don't think coaching has been the problem. I think it's fair to kind of keep an eye on what happens from a personnel standpoint. Question number four, and this is from Danny Lopes. That's at Big Lope 85. I like this question, which is why I picked it. Who loses first, the Chiefs or the Rams? Now, they play, I believe, the Sunday before Thanksgiving in Mexico City, which potentially could have both teams coming in at 10-0. So let's look at the schedules. The Rams play Denver, San Francisco. Now they go to Denver, but that should be a win. San Francisco, I think that's a win. Green Bay, New Orleans, chance they drop one of those, and then Seattle. The Chiefs get the Patriots on the road this week. Then they got Cincinnati, Denver, Cleveland, Arizona. If the Chiefs get out of Foxborough with a win, Cincinnati might be a little bit of a toss-up, but there's a pretty good chance they get to 10-0. The Rams, I think, will get to 7-0. And then we're looking at that Green Bay-New Orleans turn. And so who loses first? I think the Chiefs have I think there's a higher probability the Chiefs lose first just because they got New England this week. But if the Chiefs get past this week, then I'd flip my answer and say it'd be the Rams. So how's that for playing both sides of the fence? Final question of the week. This is from Andrew Fisher at Colts Fisher. How would you grade Chris Ballard so far? I would B plus, A minus. I think it's a fair grade. They haven't been perfect, but there are a lot of good young players in that roster now. Malik Hooker, I think, will be back where he was with time. Like, and he's still coming back from the ACL, but I like Hooker. Quincy Wilson is like a starting corner they got in the second round last year. And this year's draft class looks like it's going to be excellent across the board. Darius Leonard, I think, can be an all-pro linebacker. Quentin Nelson can be an all-pro guard. If you get two all-pros in the same draft, now you're cooking. All right, so you got those two to begin with. Braden Smith, another second-round pick, started at right tackle last week against New England. You've got Nyheim Himes, who looks like a very, very versatile piece in your offense. Like, he can play the Corey Clement, Darren Sproles role in Frank Reich's offense. That's a nice piece to have. Tyquan Lewis, they believe he can be a three technique. He can be a good pressure player there. Teray, the pass rusher out of Rutgers. Now, I don't know if he's a number one pass rusher, but it could be a good complimentary guy if they can get kind of the warhorse stud pass rusher in there. There's a lot to like in Indianapolis right now, and I keep telling people this. I think Luck's coming along. With Luck, it's going to be, when is he letting it rip on a consistent basis? You see it in spots, but it's not everywhere. It's not consistent yet. I think he's going to get there. I think the Colts are going to be really dangerous maybe as soon as 2019. That is a roster that's getting better in a hurry, and that's thanks to the job that Chris Ballard and his staff are doing. And, of course, Frank Reich and his staff have done early on, at least, in bringing those guys along. All right, I appreciate you guys coming out. As always, we want your feedback. You can leave me a message on Twitter, at Albert Breer. You can leave me a message on Facebook, at Albert R. Breer. I think you can do it on Instagram, too. I'm not positive how that one works, but that's at @Albert_Breer. Check me out in all those places, those three places, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can also leave us a review and a rating on Apple Podcasts. That helps the algorithm, which moves us up the rankings, which helps not only us, but all the MMQB podcasts. So go and do that too. And always remember to listen to all of our podcasts. They're all in one feed now, the MMQB NFL podcast. You got Andy Benoit. You got Scott Grambling on gambling. You've got Gary Grambling with Andy on that show. And you've got us, of course, the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, Jenny Vrentes, and Connor Orr. You can get us on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.